Hello, everybody. Welcome one more time to our podcast, TOEDU. Today, I'm with a friend of mine, Joshua. Joshua, how are you tonight?
Doing great. How are you?
Very good. It's been a busy day, guys. For those who are listening, we've been working all day long. We've been at Congreso here in Waco, Texas. We're just wrapping up right now. It's midnight right now, and Joshua is here to talk a little bit about his life. Joshua, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Joshua. I'm from Louisiana. I lived there most of my childhood and moved to Texas. To attend Criswell College for my bachelor's, and now I'm in my master's here at Criswell College.
What are you studying? What's your master's in?
Yeah, so my master's is a Master's of Arts in Theological and Biblical Studies. We'll be writing a thesis. And I got my bachelor's in Christian Ministry and graduated in 2023.
Have you started your thesis yet?
I have not, no. I will graduate, Lord willing, next May. So I should have started my thesis.
Do you need to write the thesis for your master's?
Yes, I do, yeah.
I did not know that. Yeah. I thought you were supposed to just for the PhD.
No, so some master's programs, some of them give you the option of doing a thesis or not doing a thesis. But at Criswell College, if you're in that specific program that I am, the Master's of Arts, Theological and Biblical Studies, you do have to unfortunately write a thesis.
Unfortunately, yeah. Well, I in my program don't have to do that, thankfully, or at least I'm not aware of.
Yeah.
If I have to, I'll find out later. Joshua, you're from Louisiana. That's a place that is in my bucket list. I mentioned earlier that I want to be in the Mardi Gras event.
Mm.
Have you ever been?
So I've been to Mardi Gras where I'm from, Louisiana. I'm from Northwest Louisiana.
Okay.
Some people don't consider that a true Cajun town, if you will. But where the party is at for Mardi Gras is definitely South Louisiana, New Orleans, Opelousas, Lafayette. I'm from the Natchitoches area. They know how to party for Mardi Gras, but it's not on the massive scale that South Louisiana.
Has your theological journey taken you away from that party, or what's your perspective of it?
Yeah, so I think
let me say, like, not every theologian
yeah.
wants to go over there, right? But here I am trying to go.
Yeah, there's definitely some voodoo magic that people try to associate with that. You know, Mardi Gras, if I'm thinking it correctly, is actually consider, part of the weekend of Fat Tuesday, which is kind of the big thing before Lent. So really, it's more of like a Catholic holiday, if you will. And so, there's some parts of this disagree. People will just get flat out drunk. They get out of their minds. Women are showing their breasts to get beads. And so some of that's like, okay. But just the tradition behind it, getting those purple and green and yellow gold beads, eating a lot of food, eating something called king cake where you hide a little naked baby, yeah, and whoever finds it has to buy it for next year, the king cake. And so
yeah,
there's some cool traditions.
I worked in a law firm and my boss was from or went to LSMU, so she was big into the king cake and the whole thing. But I forgot the real reason of it, that it was supposed to be before Lent, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's during this season, right? I guess we're approaching to Easter, so.
Yeah, so Fat Tuesday and kind of that whole Mardi Gras was, I believe, the weekend right before Valentine's Day. Obviously, Fat Tuesday's on that Tuesday, and then that next day is Lent. And so you kind of pig out, eat all of you can
yeah.
on that Tuesday, and then you give up something on Lent. So that's
so
how they
basically
celebrate.
Seen as much as you can, and then you...
Apparently so, yeah. And then people decide what they want to give up, so they just get flat out drunk and wasted, and black out, and then the next day they give something up for God. So it's interesting. It's fascinating, to say the least. Ironic.
Yeah, it's ironic, but yeah, that's a really... good side that I forgot about that. It's crazy how, yeah, I forgot, but it's a really good, interesting topic. So what do you want to do your thesis on? What's your idea? What do you want to focus on?
Yeah, so I've been kind of wrestling back and forth, definitely something to do with LGBTQ, something along with as that included in one of the elements of the thesis, something to do with evangelicalism, so somehow tying that together, but also the church's response and how they've responded to the LGBTQ community most recently. And so definitely incorporating all that. And those are the ideas I have right now. In terms of an actual thesis, I don't have that.
You don't have
yet.
Your thesis statement yet?
Yeah.
Any kind of, okay, perfect. What led you to, what's your undergrad on? What do you study for? What's your bachelor?
Yeah, so my bachelor was in Christian ministry. And so just really some broad practical ministry classes. And then I obviously my master's, I completely switched gears and
yeah.
did a complete academic, not saying Christian ministry is not an academic program, but
no,
Master's of Arts, Theological Biblical Studies is so much more on a massive scale academic.
Perfect. So what led you to theology or biblical studies? I mean, you mentioned earlier in a conversation that we had privately your life before, how do you call it?
Yeah, my BC. So, things I did BC before Christ. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to start using that, bro.
Yeah, I love
Shout
it,
out
yeah.
to you. Okay, what was your life before BC?
Yeah, so my life before BC, really before my relationship with Jesus, heavily anxious. I was, you know, depressed. I was trying to find my enjoyment, my satisfaction, my pleasure, my purpose, and chasing goals. And really, in my identity was not only in that, but also in sports. I wanted to be a sports announcer, and so that really consumed my life. I devoured sports and stats, particularly with college football and all that stuff. And so that really, that was my identity. So when I gave my life to Jesus, it's ironic, my life actually for the first year became a lot worse. Like I started, you know, smoking weed. I was smoking weed a little bit before, but I started smoking weed heavily after that.
AD?
Yeah, AD. I was drinking alcohol, partying, still doing all that, and because I wasn't discipled the best.
Okay.
I didn't really have that strong community of Christian friends who were pursuing Jesus.
So how do you define AD then? What was the, I mean, you were a believer AD after death, I guess, or after Christ, but you were still doing the same. So what was that switch on you? What was the difference?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, gave my life to Jesus. I was walked through the Roman roads. I understood what Jesus did. I wanted that purpose. I wanted that hope. And so I definitely knew I put my faith in Jesus. But the thing is, I was still trying to hold on to the things of this world. Yeah. And it really wasn't until the Lord brought a goal in my life to really kind of change that and kind of really push me. This pastor family moved in and became the pastor family at my church. And they really kind of took me in as their own. You know, I didn't have a good home life growing up. And so they really became that kind of steadiness for me. And I got to see a family structure. And so through that, you know, I began to surrender all parts of my life to Jesus. And I stopped trying to live on the fence. The problem was I was trying to live on the fence. I was trying to please both. And I feel like I had this mindset that if I can just still hang out with these non-believers, maybe I can bring them over. But the problem was I wasn't mature in my faith. And so when alcohol was pushed in front of me, when marijuana was pushed in front of me, when a girl said no to me, whatever the case may be, you know, I chose those over Jesus. Mm. And, you know, I had a great mentor, a youth pastor, shout out JP, who's like a father figure to me today, really more like a brother, a true brother. And it's I'm not putting any of this on him, but, you know, I just, you know, we did some discipleship classes. So really the weight's on me. But at the same time, you know, I just didn't have that community of students my age that were really striving after Jesus.
So how did your family looks like? Are your parents believers?
Yeah, so my parents divorced when I was six. You know, they, my dad, I guess you could say, grew up sort of in the church, not really. My mom grew up, I believe her family was Catholic. Her mom ended up dying a Messianic Jew. You know, my mom believes in Jesus. You know, she doesn't go to church, unfortunately, and so really, you know, I don't really know. I can't speak on that. Uh-huh. My dad, you know, he struggled with alcohol his whole life, but he does mention Jesus sometimes, occasionally, you know, when things are going rough, you know, in our lives, and to give encouragement. So I can't really answer that. I would definitely say, and I hate this word, Josh Howerton, a pastor at Lake Point Church, who I love, said, you know, person saying that the spiritual is a dangerous thing, and that could mean anything in today's world. And so I would say my family's spiritual. I don't know if they have a true relationship with Jesus, and, you know, only the Lord knows that.
Are you close to them as their son?
Yeah. So my dad, I've gotten close with over the years. We've kind of reconciled. He didn't really know we need reconciliation, but we really reconciled. And then my mom, there's a relationship that, you know, there's not that much depth to it, but there's a relationship there.
So they're still back in Louisiana?
So my mom stayed in Alabama when my parents got divorced. My dad moved to Louisiana with myself and my sister to live with his mom and stepdad. And so my dad and sister and brother-in-law live in Louisiana, and my mom and her husband live in North Alabama.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, no. So you said you kind of found a family in church.
Yeah, that really became, you know, growing up when I gave my life to Jesus when I was 17. But really, even before that, I spent most of my teenage years just finding any way possible to be in the church. You know, I was there as much as I could be. I hung out with the youth pastors as much as I could. I was serving at VBS and doing all these things because I just, you know, wanted to escape my home life. And so,
did you always feel welcome at all, or sometimes you were doing it just because you didn't have anywhere else to go?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't even know if it was more welcoming. You know, I think I to be fair, I was surrounded by people who did love me because they watched me grow up. And so, in terms of the church family, and so I would say I did feel welcomed. I did feel loved. But I also do agree I was doing it because, you know, I just needed a home, and church really was my safe place. And I really felt like I could go there and have this sort of family like aspect, but also just go there and in a sense let my guard down, but also just really feel loved on an emotional level.
This is interesting because up until this episode, I guess, you are the first person who has talked about that, about a church. I mean, all the people that I've had before, they're like, yeah, church is great, but there is some flaws. And with you, I mean, you seem to speak really about the church, but, and I don't want to say that it's perfect, and I don't want to be like, oh, give me the flaws.
Yeah, yeah.
I probably, for a healthy reason, don't really want to hear him now because I'm like, whoa, that was great. And he shaped the person that you are. But
yeah.
How did you see God, or how do you, how was it take on your family what you're studying? Are they cool with it?
Yeah. So to answer that, push back on the last one, yeah, I definitely think there are many flaws in the church, and, you know, just trying to keep positive and understand that Jesus and the church, you know, there's this picture and imagery of the bride and Christ and in this marriage. And so I definitely know there are flaws, which I've been hurt by the church plenty of times. But, you know, I mean, the church has really been my family growing up, so I try to stay positive on that. In terms of the question you just asked, you know, originally, I mentioned earlier in my story, I wanted to go into sports announcing, and so that was my whole identity. And it's ironic at first because my parents didn't actually think it was going to happen. You know, they were like, okay, well, that's dreaming too big. You know, I had big aspirations to work for ESPN and be a sports announcer and all these things, you know. And my parents were like, okay, that's not going to work, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. You need to have more realistic goals. That's not going to happen. And then they started hearing me announce. And they were like, oh my goodness, like you could actually do this, like you're good at this. And I was like, that's funny. And then right after they're like, oh, you could actually do this, you know. Okay. I was like, oh, I'm going into ministry, surprise. And so, you know, they were like, what? My mom, you know, she didn't really have an opinion on it. But my dad was like, are you sure? You know, he gave pushback, but he was always supportive. That's one thing I will say about my dad. He was always supportive in that. And, you know, he was worried. He was like, you know, you're going to struggle, you know, and he's helped me out so much financially. He's been that rock he's provided. But yeah, I mean, definitely he was like, are you sure you want to do this? But he was never like, no, you are not doing this.
And where is your church family located? That family of your childhood, per se, that kind of adopt you? Are they in Louisiana or here in Texas?
So they're in Louisiana, yeah. So there was it was a planted church. I was a charter member at that church. I was there from the very beginning, grew up in the church. Yeah, they're in Louisiana. Wow.
So how was moving in here, losing that family in some sort of sense?
Yeah, it was really good timing, honestly. You know, things started going wrong at that church really bad. You know, the youth pastor left and the pastor left almost within the same year and a half. And, you know, the church isn't in the best spot right now. Okay. Not healthy. So, you know, it sucks. It really hurts my soul looking back and seeing where that church is now. You know, that church had so much potential, still has so much potential. And we were really beginning to see the fruits of the labor of that church. But, you know, I left, honestly, at a good time. I hate to say that, but yeah. It was definitely hard at first. You know, then I still keep in contact with JP, that youth pastor, really, really well. And then that pastor of that church now moved to Texas, and so I see him.
It probably would have hurt you more to stay there and see the church
100%.
Going downhill.
So 100%, yeah.
Have you find that kind of community or family here in Texas?
You know, that's a good question.
I'm asking, dude, because moving city, first of all, my parents are divorced too. So that's one loss that you didn't cause, you didn't expect, it just happened. Then you kind of find refuge in church, and every transition that you make to another church, in some sort of sense, is another loss, and it hurts. And then you move to another city, even if you want to or you don't want to, but that's another loss. So what's your take? I mean, have you found a community here, or how have you been seeing? What's your perspective of loss?
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting because each church I've been at in Texas has really shaped me and has been a major milestone in my life and has taught me something valuable and has grown me and stretched me. You know, the first church I went to, it was amazing. First Baptist, shout out to them, Hunter Smith, Dr. Cole Hedgecock, Hunter Smith soon to be doctor. But that church really stretched me. It really made me grow up. Hunter Smith's still a mentor today. I talk to regularly. That church has exploded. You know, I was there right before it started to explode, and the Lord really taught me there the excellence of ministry, how much prayer is important in ministry and in the church and the life of the church. That church taught me a lot in terms of what it takes in terms of the discipline of being on staff. Fortunately, I had to leave because of COVID, you know, when Texas, Louisiana, the border shut between them. So it was kind of hard to get back and forth. So I stopped doing that, but I always consider that church like my home, and I know I can always go back there. The community there wasn't the best, but that's because, you know, 18-year-old, 17-year-old-ish, moving to a new state at the time, you know, in a city, big city, grew up in the country, and that was just overwhelming. And so I didn't really find the best community there because I was so secluded and into myself and had insecurities. Second church really opened me up, opened up my personality and really kind of molded me. It really made me get out of my comfort zone. It wasn't Baptist either. It was, they call themselves a missionary church, non-denominational church, I would say.
I've been Baptist all my life, and I'll probably change topics here, but I've been Baptist my entire life. And the more, number one, I study the history, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Second, I feel like Baptist church teach the love of God from an approach of fear. I don't know how you feel about
that. And it's the wrong meaning of fear. Like when they say fear the Lord, they mean, hey, God's going to strike you down. Yes. You better do this. It's like, hey, your parents angry. You need to like do this, or you're going to get grounded, or you're going to get a spanking or a whooping, and you're going to feel the wrath of God. When in reality, you know, the other side, non-Baptists, really a lot of the times, you know, push the idea, hey, you have a loving father, you know.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, like the love of Christ is showing through sacrifice and obedience, but really just that sacrificial, unconditional love. And so it's really interesting. Yeah, Baptists, and I don't really know why it is, I'm going to be honest with you.
It's a culture it's just been going on. And like I say, they teach you a lot about serving and all great things. Everything is great. And I think people don't realize that they come from a fearing approach until they struggle to understand the love of God and forgiveness of God. And I feel like it takes a year for you to realize that you've been hurt by the church and they don't even know, and you don't even know until you can come to God and be like, hey, am I forgiven for real? Like, I feel the cause of the effect of not teaching the love of God correctly is only shown years later in your life. So have you ever felt any kind of unhealthy fear of the Lord?
Yeah, really before I took Old Testament, Survey 102 with Dr. Kevin Wessler, who's amazing. And he really began to taught me what the fear of the Lord truly means. And I would say yes, you know, it's...
Because you did drugs, right? You did drugs, and you say about the life. Do you ever feel like, shoot, like, oh, I messed up. Like, where is grace? Did you ever, were at that point?
No, I wasn't. I definitely felt like I could tell my youth pastor, my mentor, JP, what I did, you know. And he was so loving, gracious, and merciful, and really held me accountable. And you know, it's part of my story I don't really have time to share, is the Lord is so gracious in that. And you know, the Lord used JP to really kind of, you know, convict me, but also show me that healthy fear of the Lord. But even the Lord used my non-believing friend, who was like a brother to me, to say, hey, like, you shouldn't be doing this. Like, you're not one of us. Like, you believe in Jesus. Like, and they sort of pushed me out. And it's sad when the Lord uses non-believers to get you where he needs to be. That's really sad. The Lord's used a goal in my life to get me to Texas, to get me right, and to stop smoking weed, partying, all that. The Lord also used non-believers to do that. And it's interesting, but it gave me a healthy fear of the Lord. Like, oh no, like, God's not going to smite me down, this wrathful thing. He could very well, but out of reverence and awe of who he is, like, let me obey him.
Yes.
And so, yeah, Baptist sort of gave me that fear, but I was thankful I grew up in a Baptist church that wasn't it. They were Baptist, but they practiced non-denominational in a sense, like that's how they were. And so I didn't really have that. I had great pastors, Dr. Colin Wimberly, Stephen Maccabee, and Brother Tom Smith. And so they didn't really teach like that in a sense.
So I guess they did a good job. Oh, they're a good leaders for what I'm hearing.
Excellent leaders, yeah. Okay, I've been blessed, in Louisiana at least, with amazing pastors. And
how about Texas?
Texas, I had a few good ones, you know. I had some that taught me a lot. You know, they taught me a lot. And I'm thankful for them. And, you know, they were good mentors for that time.
So you've been here for how many years?
Been here since 2019, August 2019. So okay, up on 5 years.
5 years, yeah. Coming strong. Have you have a community that you go to?
So recently,
Norway Church?
No. So recently, okay. I'm transitioning out of being a student pastor at a church in Southeast Dallas in the Wool area. And so right now, I'm looking for churches. I really enjoy Lake Point. Mm-hmm. Church aligns so much, yeah, with my mission, with my beliefs. You know, I'm also looking at a few more. So we'll see who the Lord has me. But it's refreshing. I definitely had pushback in my own life, trying to push back. But you know, it's definitely been refreshing in a sense to kind of walk into a season where I am not on staff at a church. Don't have an official title.
How do you feel doing ministry as a single man?
It's very challenging. That was one of the problems I ran into in student ministry, being a student pastor, was, you know, relying on adult leaders who were amazing. They were incredible. They had full-time jobs. They were the same age as me, but yet they still gave it their all. But they were just overworked. And so, you know, not having that wife to really do ministry alongside me, to mentor the lady students, and really my adult leader goals, it was challenging. It made it, and this is just the fear culture of, you know, what's going on in the Southern Baptist, and all that, but it really made like, okay, like, no, like I have to have a handout in front of my female students. And it is being above approach, but it was also like, man, like, I understand marriage doesn't solve everything, but it solves a lot of ministry problems in terms of ministering to my female students. And there's wisdom in ministering to female students.
But there's also temptation. There's a lot of temptation.
Yeah.
And yeah. Number one, there's temptation and there is pushback from other believers saying like, hey, you shouldn't be doing ministry if you are a single man. I understand why. I understand why and respect why. But also, dude, it's not like we're single because we want to.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I think that's having this idea that you have to be married to be a minister and a pastor, I think, is an interesting, I believe, faulty interpretation of 1 Timothy and all that. You know, this idea of husband of one wife, like some people saying, oh, you have to be married or you can't be divorced, you know, stuff like that. And that's a whole different topic, a lot of
it's personal point. Between you and the Lord.
But yeah, but also, you know, what's happening in that culture is people, that it's a polygamous culture. And so people are having multiple wives. And so... That's not what Paul's talking about. He's being counterculture in that.
And he's being a leader. I mean, he's being sent to certain people. And if you want to get deep down into the, I don't know, interpreting the text, you see that it applies to our times, but it also was sent into a polygamous culture. So I think that you can do ministry by your own. However, in my experience, I've been involved heavily in ministry. Doing it alone can be sad.
It is. It's very depressing. Yeah,
it's sad, bro, because there's nothing better than doing ministry with someone that you love and you want to, I don't want to say impress, bro, but I want to say that, hey, look what I'm doing, you know?
And they have that same calling too, almost. Yes, it's like, yeah, we're striving together to pursue the Lord and make his kingdom known, to make him known and to serve him, yeah.
Because, dude, it's sad to drive to church alone and then get over there, talk about joy and come back alone. I mean, and then you have that, and then you have that leader that is always going to tell you, oh, you should be married. And it's like, bro, shut up. Like, you don't know how much I'm trying.
Yeah, we're doing a bad job of ministering to singles.
Yes.
And what we're doing is we're creating singles ministries with the point of getting them out of the singles ministry. And, you know, Lauren F. Winner, in a book called Real Sex, it's about chastity. It's about purity, sexual purity. She does amazing work. I really respect her. And she says... The church has, it is 100% true, the church has done a terrible job, specifically, honestly, evangelical churches, oops, and ministering to singles and also doing a good job of the importance of what the call to singleness is and means. And, you know, Paul talks about that, obviously, in his letters, and I just think the church needs to do better about that. And
bro,
I've been
was
guilty
a single
of that.
Guy.
And I've been guilty of that. Jesus was a single guy. I know people are going to throw arms when I say that, but sure, they were single, and... Paul is one of the greatest heroes of faith we've ever had. Obviously, Jesus, we know who Jesus is. So.
Bro, and being single is not a sin.
Yeah, yeah.
It can lead you to sin.
I've never heard someone say it's a sin, but that's why.
They treat it as sin.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
If you're a leader, they don't want you in ministry, or they don't want you in a heavenly position where you can affect others, which, yes, is wise, but give us a break.
Yeah, and you know, and people would just go, this is right or wrong, but you can't even be a pastor, like a head pastor at church if you're not married. And,
well, I'm doing it, bro.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's uncommon, though. Like, that's...
It's uncommon.
Yeah,
and
it's taboo.
It's a taboo, but at the same time, I'm like, you don't know how many times I've been with the Lord in tears saying, like, when is the one gonna come? Yeah. Like, don't you dare to get in there, because that's what it hurts to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and yeah. What are you, just to kind of close up, dude, because it's close to be 1 a.m., I guess. If not, oh, it's already 1 a.m., right? What time is it?
12:23.
Okay, we got a little bit of time, but kind of to wrap up. Yeah. What's your interest? Why are you writing that thesis on LGBT community?
Yeah, so, you know, I have some people I know who have kind of walked into that lifestyle, you know, and they were faithfully serving the Lord. The Lord was using them mightily, you know, and there were some more failures and organizations we worked for, and they kind of walked away from the faith, and they came out as LGBTQ, IA plus, I believe it's where it's at now. And so,
who knows?
Yeah.
Probably Z.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you know, that. And then I just believe, you know, I think it's happening right now, but whether you agree or disagree, the church is at a place right now where there's about to be a split coming, almost like this Reformation. Like, it's already split denominations, like, you know, Methodists and some Presbyterians. And, you know, it's a topic that Christians need to do a better job of being charitable with, but also having conversations with each other, dialoguing, but also we need to do a better job of ministering to the LGBTQ community. And we're not doing a good job, you know. Really, honestly, I think the title of my thesis is going to be Inclusion Without Disillusion. Inclusion Without Disillusion. This idea of how can we include LGBTQI plus in the life of the church, you know, and not affirm their sin. How can we do that without affirming it, without being unbiblical, and without disrupting orthodoxy?
So, okay. So
we're not affirming
their
sin.
If you want to theologically, do you see the LGBT community as something that there is in their brain, or is a decision, or what's your take?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm reading a book right now for class, Understanding Transgenderism, Four Views, and it's so heavily debated if it's someone can be born with it, you know, if it's something that's caused by early childhood, whether it's trauma, whether it's a parent being not in the picture, whether it's sexual abuse growing up, whatever the case may be, you know. And I think it can be both. I'm going to be honest with you. I know there's different evidence on both sides that are countering each other and all that. I think it can be both. I think we're all born with sin nature, so obviously someone could be born with that, and I don't think necessarily someone being born with that desire or attraction is necessarily a sin. I think once they act on that desire, it's a sin. Definitely think it's a sin, but I also...
There is grace,
yeah. And regardless if it's a sin or not, we have to do a better job of talking about it, you know. I think we treat that sin as a bigger sin than others. Like, we don't talk about gluttony in the church. We don't talk about alcohol in the church, like being drunk. We don't talk about adultery in the church. Mm-hmm. A lot of Baptist men are committing affairs. We're not talking about that. A lot of people in the church, like specifically in the Baptist church, I'm taking shots at Baptists because I grew up Baptist. You know, there's a lot of unhealthiness in that church and in the denomination, but also just Christianity to hold. But yet we still, as conservative evangelicals, are going after that sin. And I understand, you know, the sexual revolution we're in right now, the individualistic culture that we're in right now. But I just think we need a better job of having answers and responses and finding a way to include them in the church, welcoming them, but not affirming and not saluting what orthodoxy has said about that topic.
I feel like there is some non-negotiables when it comes to the behavior that they can perform in church.
Yeah, yeah. They can't be members. They can't. And serving to an extent, you know, whatever that looks like.
Mainly for the protection of them and ourselves as leaders in the church.
Yeah.
My take on that is that, number one, we're doing an awful job because, dude, there is not a correct answer. Every case is different. Every interest of the person who is an LGBT in the LGBT community is different. Not everyone is purely desiring to change or seeking the Lord. I feel like the church must say, this is the Lord. These are His rules. You're welcome in here as long as you follow them, as long as you agree with them. Because we agree to the Lord does not agree to our behavior. So I feel like as long as we do a good job explaining that and putting a lot of theological and orthodoxy behind it, we're going to be just fine. But if we expect God to accept their behavior and their mentality, we're cooked. That's my take.
Yeah. this idea, and there's been, you know, whole books and there's whole encyclopedia entries of what, you know, Christians have done in the past on trying to minister to them, you know, and, and, you know, trying to hold on to the non-negotiables that come with that, you know, and they've tried, I can't think of the proper term, but basically like therapy that kind of tries to change their mindset and whatever the case may be, I can't think of the proper term, and many different ways to try to minister to them, I think has been harmful. I look at 1 Peter 4, verses 1 through really the all of it, but I'm just going to read the first three verses. Therefore, since Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same understanding, because the one who suffers in the flesh is finished with sin, in order to live the remaining time in the flesh no longer for human desires, but for God's will. For there's already been enough time spent in doing what the Gentiles choose to do. And so then it continues to talk about how the Gentiles lived and that they're surprised that we don't join them. And I love that. Since Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourself with that same understanding of suffering and this idea of dying to yourself, taking up your cross. And I think we need to do a better job of explaining that, you know, like, yeah, like you may have that desire. Like you may be born with that desire. Doesn't mean you have to act on it. And also, we just need to preach the gospel, preach Jesus, the blood of Christ, like preach Jesus and how he can change your life. And I think that's what we need a better job of.
And trust in the Holy Spirit, bro.
Yeah, trusting the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is the one that changed life. Yes. We can't persuade anyone. We can persuade to an extent, but we can't persuade them into a relationship with Jesus.
Because something that I've learned during ministry, especially building a church, I can buy their loyalty to the church. I can buy their assistance to the church. All I can do is present the gospel, present the Holy Spirit as he is, Jesus as he is, and the Father as he is, and the Holy Spirit is the one who buys them in. So I feel like the church needs to put more trust in the Holy Spirit and his capabilities and expect for the one who's struggling with those kind of sins to be transformed. But, I mean, the day that we start trusting the Holy Spirit a little more is the day that we're going to be completely welcome and opening to receive that kind of, I don't want to say that kind of people, but that kind of community.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Brother, it's been great having you here.
It's been fun. I've enjoyed this, yeah.
We're definitely doing a part two today.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Tonight is just late, and we got work to do tomorrow. Like I said, I guess we got to wake up in, like, what, 7 hours?
Yeah, probably 6.5.
So six and a half or so.
See what happens. But hey, we do this for the people.
We do this for the people. Shout out to anyone.
I mean, hey, shout out to anyone who's listening. Yeah, I mean,
shout out to Congreso that brought us here.
Yeah. Shout out to this.
We
nice
had a couple complications
one.
in the hotel, but we made it.
Hey, we're in the presidential suite. Yeah, we're living the life.
Living the dream. Joshua, thank you so much for being here, bro. Hey, it's been a pleasure.
You. Yeah.